Dallas East Elementary walkthrough, May 18th. The basement. The only way down to the basement is by the rear door to the south of the building. There is half a flight of stairs from the first floor, which leads to a landing and the back door. Outside the back door is the faculty parking lot. However, to the right of the staircase is a wall with a door, which leads to the basement. The stairs to the basement are wooden open stairs. You know, the type that have no back to them, and as a kid you would go down them really fast, afraid someone was going to grab your feet. Yeah, like that. The basement is cavernous with concrete floors and walls. It is filled to the brim with the detritus of years of being a school. The walls are painted a deep blue, and the floor is painted black. The paint is peeling. Audio diary of Dr. Anna Georgina Plume, August 1st, 10 a.m. We are pleased to report that the doors opened again this morning. Daryl and my father have gone home at my urging. Dad took the dogs too, but Billy and Roybos.
No way am I leaving you here alone.
This is my problem. No one else needs to get hurt. Please take Roybos and go stay with my parents until we figure this out.
I've made myself clear. And so has Roybos for that matter.
She's just being stubborn. Help me get her in the carrier.
AG, we are going to solve this together. The sooner you can accept that, the sooner we can work on stopping Algernon for good. Not another word about us leaving.
I wish we could at least get the cat to safety.
I think she can hold her own against the worst he has to offer. He seemed weirdly afraid of her.
Yes, and that is a mystery to delve into for a future day.
So what's your story?
My story?
You're next, right? There's one more box. It has to be you. Your history with this place.
I'm not sure what I'll find. It's probably also worth putting on the record that after my father told his story about this place, we looked into the corresponding box. It had some of Melinda Basil's own notes from their exploration and a transcript of an interview she'd conducted with Dad about what he saw in the basement.
So now we're going to open yours.
Oh, wow.
So tell me what this all means.
It's going to take a while.
I can put on the kettle this time.
Lapsang Souchong, please. I need something strong. Discussion between Billy Ocher and Anna Georgina Plume about the latter's history with the Ellisfield School. I am employing autoethnographic methods to carry this discussion further, recorded August 1st in the Ellisfield School. I have in front of me a box of documents from the personal collection of Melinda Basil, who, in addition to working as a public librarian, has served as a sort of de facto record keeper for the history of the Ellisfield School since the 1970s, working with my grandmother to ensure the documents were safe. Okay, so we have a brochure for summer library camps, summer 2007.
Care to explain what that's about?
Okay, you know how libraries have summer reading programs?
Yeah.
Well, we had one here. Nana Plume ran it for the county with the assistance of Mr. Zaffer.
Just so I'm remembering this correctly, at this time your grandmother had retired from running the school library.
Yes, and then immediately started working part-time at the county library, running the Ellisfield branch, which was also located in the school library.
And Mr. Zaffer replaced her as school librarian?
Yep. She sort of adopted him, which is kind of in her nature, but knowing just how much of the family business the library was, it all makes sense suddenly. Anyway, Nana had been challenged to increase engagement among elementary and middle school-aged children, and I had been challenged to get a summer job by my parents. She had a small discretionary budget, and together we decided library camp. The building was empty during the summer, and it had everything. Books, space for art, a playground.
A sentient building and a murder basement?
We stayed out of the murder basement. We developed an 8-week program running for all of June and July. Each week had a theme, not to dive too deeply into the intricacies of running a summer camp, but we offered a discounted rate for multiple weeks, and yes, the whole thing was insured and above board.
Naturally. I would expect nothing less from Dr. and future Dr. Plume.
They still run this program. They just do it at the Hayden's Landing Library. It's quite big now. They've got like 20 counselors, and the YM and YWCA are involved. It's a big deal. But back then, it was just me and my cousin Rob.
You never mentioned any cousins. I assume the Plumes were a string of only children.
We are. Rob is on my mom's side. We went through school together. He was captain of the basketball team. I was, well, me. You heard what Dad said about fake IDs and sneaking into college lectures. But we had to have another counselor. The director of the library said they had to be male, and Rob made it sound like I was getting away with something by taking the camp counselor job, so to appease him, Aunt Cindy, and my mother, we had to offer him the job. He wasn't completely inept. So the first week of camp went well enough. The kids seemed to have fun, and as annoying as I found my cousin, he seemed to do a good job, and it really was just hanging around the school, playing games, reading books, doing arts and crafts. We decided that every Friday the kids would stay later, like 8 p.m., nothing wild, and we would have a campfire. As this is a recording, and you cannot hear scare quotes, we were not authorized to have an open flame on the school ground. We were, however, authorized to get pizza from Pizza Depot, and Rose had a fake campfire she built for the school play that we could use. We set up our faux fire by the row of oak trees on the eastern edge of the schoolyard.
That sounds like a fun evening.
It was, until...
There is always an until.
When you're a camp counselor, you learn really quickly to just intuitively know how many children are around you. If you're supervising 8 kids, you can look at a group of kids and instantly know that there are 8. And if there isn't, you can figure out who is missing in seconds.
And who was missing?
That wasn't it. There were more children than there were supposed to be. At this point, that's probably not the most surprising revelation given the school's abilities. But at the time, it was terrifying. And while it wasn't dark, it was close enough to dusk and everyone was milling around, such that I couldn't keep track of who was who. My brain obviously didn't go to the ghost children place. I just assumed they were kids from the neighborhood. Occam's razor and all that. And we had more than enough pizza. I wasn't about to turn children away. But it was somewhat late, and even though summer in Ellisfield does lend itself to kids having the run of the town, I wanted to make sure it was okay. So I made the announcement that if you weren't a camper at library camp, you had to get your parents' permission to stay at the campfire. I was met with blank stares, and the kids asked me what I meant. At that moment, I looked out on the crowd, and there were once again only 8 children. Rob looked at me like I had 2 heads, and I chalked it up to everyone running around, leading me to double count some of the children. And yet, when they went back to playing, I could have sworn there were at least 2 more. Yet, whenever I got to look at the individual kids, it was only the ones that had been there all week. Only 8 kids sat down around the fire for pizza at any rate. That was the first time anything was odd during the summer, but it was certainly far from the last. The next week, I looked over the children's paintings that they had left after doing arts and crafts, and there was an extra one, which was dark and unsettling. Nothing directly violent. We had our mandatory training on what to look out for. It was just a painting in a childish hand, but it felt wrong. And like I said, the fact that it was unaccounted for made it worse. Rob, of course, told me that I was overreacting, and that if there was an extra painting, it was because a student finished their project quickly and decided to make a second. But at the end of the next day, no one claimed it, and the following morning, I asked everyone directly, and no one knew who it belonged to.
So do you think it was the school or Algernon?
Not sure. One day, I sent the kids up to Nana Plume in the library while I cleaned the cafeteria, and I heard the kids running around the hallway. I went to make sure everyone was being safe and no one was there. I know this sounds like garden variety, especially with what we've gone through, but it was especially unsettling. But I definitely noticed more than he did.
Because you were paying closer attention.
Exactly. Like, he was good with the kids, but despite our equal titles, I felt like his supervisor. To his credit, he kind of accepted the dynamics, so at least I didn't have to figure out how to manage him without knowing he was being managed. Plus, he didn't keep doubting me for long. In the third week, he was leading a soccer game while I was setting up for arts and crafts, and he brought the students in, like, a half hour early. I was annoyed until I saw the look on his face. I'll spare the description, as it would be cliched at this juncture. I told everyone to sit quietly at the tables while we talked briefly. He told me he saw a small child go out into the woods behind the school and he needed me to watch the kids while he looked for them. He never really developed the immediate ability to look at the group and see who was missing. And no one was missing. I told him this, but he insisted he had seen a child go into the woods and that while it might not have been one of ours, there was a child wandering in the woods right now and he needed to go look for them. I could not argue with his reasoning.
I believe we've discussed how some of the trails have patches that are unsafe for small children. So he went into the woods, and I led arts and crafts, and then Nana Plume led story time, and then, because the kids did not get to play the soccer game, we played with the parachute in the gymnasium. Rob was gone about 3 hours. Everyone had gone home by the time he returned. He had covered the trails extensively and saw no signs of the child. He was going to call for a search, but Nana Plume discouraged him. She said that all of the kids from the camp were accounted for, and while she believed what he saw, if he didn't find the child on the trails, it was probably one of the few local kids that knew the trails really well and had likely left the woods to go home. I don't believe that now, but I trusted that my grandmother wouldn't just leave a situation with a child in trouble.
So what happened next?
The fourth week of the program went by without incident. Neither Rob nor I saw any additional children. No one disappeared, no voices, no additional art, nothing. It was strangely calm. I thought that maybe the emptiness of the building had gotten to us in the first few weeks. You know that this is a big place when empty, and we didn't have a lot of lights on in the hallway or rooms we weren't using. So we just chalked it up to nerves. I think Rob and I even had a conversation where we both said as much, but then the fifth week, the first day, one of the youngest girls came up to me and told me, "That boy is being mean to me." I asked her which one. The girl wasn't new, she'd been there every week. In fact, all of our kids this week had been there at least 1 week prior. So when she didn't give a name, that had to be the first sign that something was wrong. She pointed over to a shadowy corner in the schoolyard. No one was there.
Now, I've told you about second grade and the bully that no one else seemed to see. While that did not seem odd to 8-year-old Anna Georgina, even after the scary encounter in the basement, 18-year-old Anna Georgina started to think back on that story and wonder if maybe there wasn't more to it. At the same time, it was possible that it was one of the other kids who had just moved to somewhere else on the playground, or a neighborhood kid who had dropped in on the playground to see what was happening. So I told her that if she saw the boy again, to send him to me and tell him that I wanted to talk to him.
Other kids started reporting similar complaints to both me and Rob, but the culprit was never found. Whereas before, Rob would have chalked it up to a game they were playing, the forest had changed his perspective, and he was even more certain that something was up than I was. As you know, I always keep a healthy bit of skepticism.
Do I ever?
But I wasn't about to make Rob feel as unhinged as I had felt when he didn't believe me. After 3 days of the invisible antagonist on the playground, unfortunately he did not come inside with us, he allegedly pushed a child down the stairs of a curly slide. They were lucky they weren't seriously hurt, but that's a 2-story slide. After everyone left, we had a conversation with Nana Plume. She listened intently and told me she would take care of it.
And did she?
The next day, there was a school bus to take us all to Hayden's Landing. We could use the children's department of the main library in the middle school next door. The final week of camp also took place there as well. She said a pipe burst in the school and the building was closed for repairs.
Is that what you think happened?
Of course not. But at the time, I was so relieved that I think I bought it just so I wouldn't have to worry about what was happening with the school. It was no longer my problem. As a postscript, I ran the camp for the next 7 summers until I got into the 3rd year of my PhD program and they gave me summer funding. After the first summer, it was always in Hayden's Landing. They paid me a little more and made me camp director. It was a nice perk.
As you can see, Miss Plume, I've learned a few tricks from the school over the years.
Dr. Plume, you come into my home, you harass me, you break my arm. The least you can do is call me by my proper title, you jerk.
Okay, what else is in the box?
Just a second. Let me mark this recording. This is part two of a discussion between Anna Georgina Plume and Billy Ocher about Dr. Plume's experience with the Ellis Field Building. Why don't you reach in there and tell me what you see?
Okay. It is a program. An Ellis Field Holiday in Lights. It's dated 2010, and there appears to be some handwriting on it, but I can't quite make out what it's saying.
Okay. That is the annual holiday festival in town. Dad really gets into it. They decorate all the gazebos, all the parks. You might be interested in it from a research perspective. But anyway, when this was a school, it would be closed for 2 weeks before Christmas, and every room in the place would be decorated like a winter wonderland. They would do different themes. It was magical. The fake snow budget alone was likely four figures. It wasn't a holiday without it. Like, if we could fix what's wrong with this place, I would love to do it again. But anyway, I was home for the holidays and I volunteered to guide people through the school. We always dressed like Victorian Christmas carolers. We would lead them through pretty much the entire school and then end on the stage where the guests could have hot chocolate and cookies.
We've definitely got to do that. We're going to do that this December. I believe we'll figure it out.
Anyway, I would volunteer every year without fail. And without fail, there would be something odd, not unsettling or anything like that. But once, when the school was decorated in a Dickensian theme, I opened a door to an unfamiliar hallway which was covered with twinkling lights like stars. Knowing what I know now, it was as if the school was trying to contribute to the decorations without fully understanding the assignment. Another time, among the Santa Clauses in red and Père Noëls in green, there was a figure of a man who looked very similar, just that his costume was yellow. I called him the Banana Man. But it was always like, that's odd. Not necessarily unsettling.
So this place gets into the festive spirit.
Very much.
That's nice. So where did it all go wrong?
No, nothing scary about this one. But let me see. Yeah, this is my handwriting. Really, I think maybe the creepiest part is that someone has hung on to all of these parts of my life for years. But yes, let's see. The notes say Banana Man, Light Tunnel, Pirate Nutcracker, Purple Christmas Tree. Okay, yeah. These are all the things that I found that just seemed kind of off about the festivities. And now that I know what I know about the school, I think at the time I just sort of assumed there was some sort of quirky artist behind it. Dad has a lot of weird artist friends because of the whole public sculpture thing. I think I thought maybe one of them was hiding slightly odd decorations among the school.
It's just a nice change of pace that nothing went wrong in this one.
Tell me about it.
What do you say we take a break? You're looking tired. Maybe you rest your eyes for half an hour, I'll be in with some tea, and then we can finish the box.
As much as I don't want to rest, I think I need it. She put herself into it.
What?
She put herself into it.
Again, what? Also, maybe who?
Lucy. She put herself into the school. She told me. Algernon told me. That's why it worked. When she tried to summon the genius loci, that's why I'm able to see her on the third floor. That's why Algernon is hanging on.
So what does that mean for us?
It means after we finish talking about the contents of this box, we go have a conversation with one Mr. Hobbs.
Okay, are we ready to dive back into what is in the box of your documents?
I suppose so. This is part three of a conversation with Billy Ocher about my personal history with the Ellis Field School, recorded August 1st. Let's look at what's left in the documents.
There is only a file folder left, but it looks particularly full.
Oh dear.
What is the file, AG?
It's my medical records from my surgery.
So what does this mean?
I need to preface all of this by saying that I can imagine hearing all of these stories. It might seem weird with my history that I chose to live here. Some of these memories were lost. Not, to be clear, repressed, but I think it's important to remind you just how much of our day-to-day we forget. The things from childhood may have struck me as odd at the time, but it's only through the perspective of adulthood that I've really begun to understand the degree to which these occurrences were outside of the normal. One memory brings others back. And so, my surgery. I had surgery while I was working on my master's degree. As Billy has alluded to, my partner at the time moved out rather suddenly while I was still in the hospital recovering from said surgery. It was a devastating time of my life, and I would rather not dwell on it.
I understand.
So I couldn't stay by myself after the procedure. I wound up coming home. It was May before library camp, but after school had let out for the summer, Nana Plume was working in the library, so I spent a lot of time visiting her. The building was mostly empty. When the library was open as a branch, people would come in for books, but most of the time, Nana Plume was just by herself in the building. Oh. Oh.
Yeah, maybe that was by design.
But I spent a lot of time here while I was recovering. And then I started waking up here. I would find myself in the empty library. I was never sure how I got in, and I chalked it to sleepwalking, but I could never figure out how I got into the building. I was concerned, but you know how my mother was, still is, and I was afraid to say anything. I was worried she would put me back in the hospital if they knew. I covered it by saying it was just early morning walks, and I think to some extent they bought the excuses. They may have suspected that something was wrong, but they never said anything. And then...
What?
I went to my doctor for a follow-up. I had healed at a remarkable rate. Like, he'd never seen anything like it in a 30-year career. Fortunately, he was a small-town doctor and didn't think to research it beyond that.
How do you know it was the school?
After everything you've seen and all of the stories you heard, could it be anything else?
No, you're right. It's just weird to think about.
Yeah, like in the end, it's less about the big ghost story of all of it. It's just taking care of me.
It's almost poetic that you wound up back here.
Yes, and now it's my turn to take care of it.
You don't mean...
Yes. Algernon Hobbs, you have matters to answer for.
Maybe you can't just summon him.
Well, I guess we'll go to him. Moment of truth. Last chance to back out.
Not happening.
Okay, but put the cat in the office.
I don't think she's going to let you. Have I told you how much I hate this basement?
The feeling is mutual.
Hello, Algernon.
Usurper.
Drama queen.
The banishment will wear off eventually.
I plan to resolve this now.
How?
I'm going to give you a chance to leave. To be at peace. To let go of all the anger and the hurt. You can just leave. You don't have to be defined by the worst thing you've ever done. You don't have to hold on to the pain and resentment. You can just leave.
And what if I don't? What if I insist on claiming the building as my own? What if I insist on taking over?
Then you will have to go through me.
Then I will.
AG!
No!
She's not breathing. Oh no.
Heal, my child. I am free. Can we help her?
Come on, AG, you did it. He's gone. We won.
Breathe, Dr. Plume. It is not your time yet. You will be well. You will have many more years here.
She's breathing.
Good morning. Why am I in the guest room?
It was easier to get you up here. How much do you remember?
All of it, I think. But why am I here?
I wouldn't think about that too much. You've been given another chance. Just make the most of it.
But...
Don't think too much about it. But you may want to come here.
Why?
There were some renovations overnight while you were asleep.
What?
When did you have time to add a third floor?
Ellis East Elementary walkthrough, May 18th. The ceilings of the basement are slightly domed, with the ceiling being the same color as the walls. The room is large, continuing with tunnel-like hallways branching out to the north and the west. I cannot go down these tunnels because they are blocked by all the items that fill the basement.
Anna, Georgina?
Down here, Marianne.
Why don't you come back up here? There's not much to see down there. I wanted to find you because I've got a bit of a surprise for you. I found the key to the tower. Would you want to go up there?
Yes. You heard the lady. We are going to go back upstairs and continue on to the tower. Lavender Evening Fog is a fiction podcast. This episode was written by Victoria Digman Burnett, direction and script supervision by Ben Baird, produced, mixed, and edited by Nick Federinko with additional editing by Victoria Digman Burnett. Executive producers are Ben Baird and Victoria Digman Burnett. The voice of Anna Georgina Plume is Victoria Digman Burnett. The voice of Billy is Nick Federinko. The voice of Algernon Hobbs is Danny Heary. The voice of Mayor Plume is David Gurman. The voice of Sophia is Amy Yap. The voice of Lucy Hobbs is Kat Falk. The voice of Marianne is Danielle Roberts. The Lavender Evening Fog logo was designed by Allison Dickman, and Ms. Bitey, our carousel opossum, was designed by Matt Lowe. This episode is brought to you by a voice from the distant future. This episode pairs well with a rock oolong tea with mineral notes.